This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. It's Thursday, November 15th. Welcome to a rather snowy edition of the Noon Business Hour. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. We could see an inch of snow before it's over today, a high temperature of 36. Currently, 34 degrees with a wind chill of 29.
And the Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Markets are mixed. The Dow peaked above the negative territory a couple of times before heading right back below. Let's get the latest from Joan Doniger at Bloomberg.
That's right. Gains in tech shares just couldn't do it by themselves, so we are seeing a mixed market. The Dow is now down 103 points. The Nasdaq is up 13, the S&P falling 6. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index is edging higher by about a tenth of a percent. Gains from Zebra Technologies leading the way, but losses among home builders, utilities, especially PG&E in California, and retailers are outweighing the gains on Wall Street. This even as retail sales in October jumped ahead of the holiday shopping season and recovered from a hurricane-related drop in September. But while Walmart posted a positive earnings report, its shares are lower right now, and JCPenney is trying to draw more shoppers in with discounts, and that isn't working. Sales fell in its latest quarter, and it expects flat same-store sales for this holiday quarter, so its shares are falling sharply, too. Back to you.
Thanks, Joan. On today's Noon Business Hour, a quick look at the global economy and where there are signs of stress, and the U.S. government moving on e-cigarettes.
Speaking of the federal government, we'll talk about how Uncle Sam could become Amazon's biggest customer. And then it's holiday shopping season right around the corner. And we'll talk about the rather robust and positive forecasts for retail sales coming up in the month of December.
Your best stock option. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Food and Drug Administration wants to stem a troubling rise in teenage vaping. We're going to cover that in our next segment right now. Britain's exit from the European Union is anything but smooth, comes at a time of a global economic slowdown. We welcome Bill Adams, senior economist at PNC Financial Services in Toledo, Ohio. Bill, thanks for joining us today. We read today that the British sterling plunges and key ministers are quitting over the Brexit deal. Bring us up to date on this.
Thanks for having me. You know, the ministers who've quit today, I believe we're up to seven ministers who've quit so far over the government's Brexit deal. I think the short version is that in the Brexit referendum of June 2016, the government promised much more than they could ever deliver to the to voters. And now they finally have a deal, and it's clear that the deal is not as good as what was promised in the referendum. The UK's political leaders are having to decide whether they admit that the promises prior to the referendum were unrealistic, or do they play a blame game, or do they decide that, you know, information has changed, and so our position on Brexit will change too. In the meantime, it's causing a lot of political turmoil in the UK. There's a meaningful chance that the British government will see a change in the prime minister, or even possibly a snap election in the near term. And a second referendum on whether the UK actually should leave the EU is also a possibility.
And so what is the effect on British citizens?
Well, it's funny, you know, the referendum happened. There was a huge move in the exchange rate immediately after, way back in 2016. The UK actually is still a member of the European Union right now. They'll continue to be a member at least through March of next year. And the British government has negotiated as part of its exit deal that the UK would stay inside the European Union, or EU rules would continue to apply, and they would be a de facto member at least through the end of 2020, if not beyond then. And so the effect on the UK's economy so far has been a slowdown in capital spending as businesses try to figure out what the future holds for them, and also a slowdown in both hiring as well as a tightening in the job market, as a lot of Europeans from elsewhere in the EU have left the UK and gone to Germany or the EU's other stronger economies seeking for work and opportunity since the referendum signaled that that the UK is changing.
Can the government just unilaterally walk away from Brexit and just say, hey, look, we had this referendum, we didn't do all of our due diligence, it's going to be a lot harder than we think, never mind. I mean, is that a realistic possibility at this point?
I think what would have to happen for the government to say never mind, and actually we do think that a never mind outcome where the UK either stays in the EU or for all intents and purposes their relationship to the EU is the same as EU membership, I think we would need to see a second referendum, and for that we'll probably have to see the government admit that the current Brexit deal does not have the support of a majority of members of Parliament. And I think there's a good chance of that. I think a lot of the hard Brexit supporters in the UK think that the exit deal won't go nearly far enough. Other soft Brexit supporters never liked it to begin with. The opposition Labour Party probably is not going to vote for it. So there's a good chance that we'll see more political turmoil along the way. I think the odds of a hard Brexit, though, are still very low. It would be so disastrous for British shipping, the British logistics industry. They would have to ration traffic coming into the British Isles from the Channel Tunnel. I just think that the government wouldn't follow through with that. I think it's probably bluffing.
Well, Bill, thank you very much for your insights this afternoon. Bill Adams, a senior economist at PNC Financial Services based in Toledo. Coming up next, the FDA taking action against flavored e-cigarettes.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Government regulators are making moves to try to stem a major surge in vaping by teens. Joining us on the International Auto's Orland Park business line is Anna Edney, health policy reporter with Bloomberg News based in Washington. Anna, welcome back to the program. What we know about efforts that the city of Chicago is undertaking to crack down on flavored e-cigarette materials. Federal moves are afoot in Washington these days?
What we heard FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb say today is that he is firming up a policy that his agency will implement to restrict sales of flavored e-cigarettes, but excluding menthol and mint, so that they'll be restricted to vape shops that are usually typically adult-only kind of stores, and online retailers that have some heightened age verification. He also said, and this is a little bit longer, you know, further down the line, that the agency is going to seek to drop a ban on traditional menthol-flavored cigarettes. And they also want to eventually eliminate flavored cigars. So they're going after all of these tobacco products that kids are really drawn to.
25 years ago, the tobacco lobby was so powerful that it was controversial to even suggest that cigarettes were addictive. And now the FDA is thinking of cracking down on all menthol brands. And is there even a peep coming from the other side, or have the anti-tobacco forces, have they won and this is just simply a rout?
No, there are peeps certainly coming from the other side. I saw particularly a statement that Altria put out today, that they're a big tobacco company, and they said that they think banning menthol flavors is extreme and that it's not supported by science and the evidence, and the FDA obviously feels differently. I imagine this will end up in a court battle.
In fact, the cigarette makers probably see these folks as competition, and I can't imagine them standing up too much for these folks.
Oh, for the e-cigarette yes. Industry, certainly your traditional large tobacco companies are happy to see some restrictions in that space. Their biggest competition is essentially a startup called Juul that has all of basically potentially all of the sales of flavored e-cigarettes. So anything that will restrict them is really aimed at Juul. And so you'll see the bigger tobacco companies pretty happy with that.
Will we see a tobacco industry in 15 years, or will big tobacco simply be out of business by that point?
They're certainly seeing that as the writing on the wall a little bit and are trying to diversify. That's why you do see them have some e-cigarette businesses, and they've not gone kind of as much all in on the flavors as Juul has. And also, you know, even to the very extreme, Philip Morris has a really interesting slogan now that they're trying to go smoke-free. And so they you know, aren't selling the traditional tobacco products in the U.S. anymore, and they're trying to get approval for a device they call Heat Not Burn, which heats up what looks like a little cigarette, but, you know, because it's not at the same levels as when you're lighting a cigarette with, you know, with fire, that they feel like you'll get less of the harmful chemicals as a result. And so the tobacco companies can tell that this is where everything is heading, even more so with Scott Gottlieb as commissioner of the FDA, and they're trying to diversify their portfolios.
Well, it'll be interesting watching this as it gets handed around in Washington. Thanks so much for joining us today, Anna. Anna Edney is health policy reporter at Bloomberg News in Washington. Still ahead in Technology Thursday, the U.S. government is on its way of becoming Amazon's largest customer.
WBBM News Time, 12:25. Now WBBM Business from Bloomberg, and here's Joan Doniger.
Well, there is a sort of balancing act going on between retail data overall and Walmart right now. Everything has popped positive. The Dow is up 69 points, the NASDAQ 67, the S&P 13, the Windrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is leaning to the negative side of flat. Tribune Publishing are leading the gains. Tech shares have held on to their gains, even though Walmart earnings have been weighing. Its shares are falling about 1.5%. Walmart missed revenue targets, even though its e-commerce business exploded by about 40% last quarter, putting it ready to nose out Apple as the third largest e-tailer in the country behind Amazon and eBay. Now let's check in with Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities and Normal. Pete?
Hey, we've had ranges today of corn, 5 cents. We've been up 4.75 to down 0.5. December at the moment, up 2 at 3.69. Beans have had a 14-cent range from up 14 to up 0.25. At the moment, November's our January beans are up 2.75 at 8.86 1/4. Wheat's at a 6 cent range from up 6 to unchanged. December wheat's up 3.75. So mostly to the plus side, but not near the highs. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities Normal. You can reach us at 800-779-1515.
With business at 25 and 55, live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Joan Doniger, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stocks are back in positive territory. We'll see what's on the mind of Wall Street.
The tally of retail sales for October seen as a major rebound.
Technology Thursday, Amazon could soon have a new largest customer, the U.S. government.
Parts of the Chicago area see some heavy snow showers, while other parts of the country deal with major pre-winter storms.
And on the market watch right now, the Dow is up 141 points, quite the turnaround. The NASDAQ is up 87, the S&P 500 up 20.
34 degrees right now, the wind chill index is 29.
And the Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Markets are off their earlier lows. They're moving higher, quite higher right now. We're joined by Mike Larson, who is the senior analyst at WeissRatings.com based in Jupiter, Florida. Mike, welcome back to the program. What's driving this sudden about-face for the Dow? 1 point down, a couple of hundred points, now it's up 150.
Well, if you're not seasick watching these markets, then you're really not paying attention, right? I mean, we had in October a decline from high to low in the Dow of about 2,800 points. We then gained back about 2,000 and change worth of those points, and then we dropped another 700-800 points on the downside. So it's definitely a seasickness kind of market. And I think a lot of what's going on here is people trying to figure out, is this, or you know, is this the start of a bear market? Is this just another correction? And you know, unfortunately, I kind of come down in the first camp because I think we've seen a lot of divergences in the market, where the credit markets, the bond market, especially in the corporate arena, has been underperforming or actually signaling more problems, even as the equity market has continued to set new highs in the case of the S&P. So there's some worrisome signs that I think you have to be getting more defensive in terms of what you invest in, looking for more safe yield-type stocks versus all the names that were previously carrying up higher, FANG stocks and so on. So again, more defensive, more conservative as the market tries to figure out what's going on here.
And you see so many external factors, too, that could be weighing on the minds of traders, whether it is the political instability in Great Britain. There a number of ministers at Downing Street are being reorganized or pushed out because of the difficulty in the Brexit negotiations. And then you also have economic slowdowns in other countries not named the United States. And you probably have a lot of people here wondering if we're next.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, all last 12 to 18 months or so, you look at the performance of foreign markets versus how the U.S. markets perform, and there's been this huge gulf that's opened up in terms of a lot of the rest of the world having problems, Europe, China, and so on, whereas we've been sort of the shining star that people have been flocking to. The question now is that growth pace starting to slow? Clearly, in sectors like housing, we've seen issues where a lot of the housing stocks and home sales have been weakening, mortgage demand has been falling, and so on. That hasn't spread yet to the overall economy. We have, you know, generally speaking, we've still seen relatively strong employment news and so on. But clearly, some of the turmoil we've seen recently is investors, you know, tugging at each other. You know, you've got the bulls and the bears trying to duke this out and figure out if we've seen the best growth in terms of earnings and the economy in this economic cycle or not.
Well, Apple has technically entered a bear market. Will other FANG members join them?
You know, here the problem with Apple and especially some of the other more growthier, higher multiple names like Amazon and Netflix and so on is that these stocks, really, investors have dogpiled into them or herded into a handful of a few stocks that have had tremendous valuations, tremendous market caps and so on at the exclusion of almost everything else. You could call it a growth bubble or growth infatuation, whatever you want to look at it, and they've left a lot of value stocks by the wayside. What's starting to happen is money's coming out of those growth strategies and rotating into value. I mean, you look at the last 6 months, the kinds of stocks that have been leading are things like utilities, consumer staples, whereas a year or two ago, it was all tech, tech, tech. So I think that process is probably in the early phases. So on rallies, I'd look to lighten up on some of those growth names and look to reposition into some of these safer, dividend-yielding type stocks because I think they'll hold up better in a tough market.
Besides manufacturing, what are some of the other stocks in this category?
Well, sure. Again, I think it's utilities, it's consumer staples, food and beverage type names. Again, all the things you would associate with companies who can grow their earnings and you know maintain their sales even a rougher even in a rougher economic environment. Because I think that tends to be what the market's signaling. I mean, you know, you're not seeing these declines in the markets or these crazy swings. That's not typical behavior if the bull market trend was still going to continue the way it has for the last 9+ years.
We'll talk about this a little bit more in Technology Thursday coming up in our next segment, but there have been a number of stories between the Amazon headquarters sighting story, which has rankled a number of the other cities that thought they were in the running, and then reading the New York Times story about some of the internal deliberations inside of Facebook as they tried to head off some of the political controversy surrounding them. In the next decade, do you see an effort to sic regulators on Facebook and Amazon and potentially break them up?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, one thing that's been underappreciated up until recently is the building anti-monopoly, anti-privacy concern and basically political risks that we have in these names. They've been allowed to grow pretty unfettered from a market regulation standpoint. But as you pointed out, when it comes to the Facebook news, it was in the New York Times, where you look at, you know, all these regulators or all these people being angry at the fact Amazon's getting these multi-billion-dollar subsidies and handouts funded by taxpayers when they're, you know, their market cap recently came close to $1 trillion. That's the kind of stuff that does get the population a little agitated. And if there's anything we've learned in the past, it's that legislators are going to start reacting to that. So, yes, I do think you have political risk going forward, and that's going to tend to bring down multiples for these names.
Mike, always great to have you on the program. Thanks for joining us. Mike Larson, senior analyst at WeissRatings.com in Jupiter, Florida. Up next, Technology Thursday, government contracts proving to be huge moneymakers for Amazon.
Making sense of your dollars. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Technology Thursday on the Noon Business Hour. Amazon is finding the American government to be a very lucrative customer. Let's discuss the relationship with RJ Hottovy, consumer equity strategist at Morningstar in Chicago. Welcome back to the program, RJ. Amazon is the government's biggest customer. And what does that mean for that sector in the economy?
Yeah, I think it's interesting, and I think what it shows is just Amazon's dominance in the cloud computing space, and the particularly all the different functionality and features that they have makes it a natural partner for a large, multifaceted organization like the U.S. government. There's been some pushback whether or not it makes sense to have a single contractor handle a lot of the business, with players like Microsoft and Google, raising some concerns. But ultimately, AWS is the market leader. They have the most technology in place on the cloud computing side, the most features, and I think it's a worthwhile arrangement.
Yeah, but it may have some critics who say it should be broken up.
Yeah, and what we do typically see for AWS clients, Amazon Web Services clients, is that they heavily rely on AWS, typically use 90% of their cloud storage and computing functions with AWS, but then use about 10% with somebody else, another provider, as a fail-safe if something were to go wrong. That is why this potential JEDI contract that Amazon Web Services is pursuing is so interesting, because you would expect to see some additional providers at least be able to bid for the process, just in case something were to go wrong with some of the AWS features or servers, and to kind of prevent any kind of issues with that.
The Amazon or AWS already provides cloud computing services for the CIA. This would be this Joint Enterprise Defense Infrastructure contract would be for other military matters. When you offload the entire intelligence and military capability off on one customer, as the federal government and as the military and the Pentagon, security must be absolutely paramount. They got to make sure that Amazon is almost airtight when it comes to breaking into those cloud computing servers and possibly getting top secret information.
Yeah, and I think that's where AWS stands apart from its competitors at this point. For security purposes, it does seem like Amazon is the undisputed leader on that front, and largely because they've had a couple of years head start compared to some of their peers and dealing with large enterprises. So, at this point, I mean, if you're going to go with anybody, if security is your number one feature, I think AWS is your partner. Although I'd say that Microsoft and Google are both narrowing the gap on that front as well. But AWS is certainly a leader on that front, but your point is valid that this is something that is of utmost importance when looking at this contract.
And what's your feeling about these stocks right now?
Yeah, I think the pullback we've seen across a lot of the technology names, particularly the consumer internet names, I think has been overdone at this point. I think Amazon is still looking like one of the more attractive plays in the e-commerce space, not only for the Amazon Web Services contract and the potential that holds, but I also think that there's a lot of other features to like, whether it be, this advertising business is starting to really take hold for Amazon, as well as, continuing to get more engagement out of Prime members and increasing third-party sales, all shapes up, not only for a growth story, but you're also seeing a more powerful margin expansion story emerge from this company. Have a $2,200 fair value estimate, and it looks pretty attractive at current levels.
Well, thank you very much for the insights. RJ Hottovy, consumer equity strategist at Morningstar, based in Chicago. Join us at this time tomorrow for Entrepreneur Friday, and still to come, retailers rebound in October.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Now, last month proved to be a solid one for the retail sector. Joining us now on the International Autos Orland Park business line is Stephen Keith Platt, director of the Platt Retail Institute in Hinsdale and research director at the Retail Analytics Council at Northwestern University. Stephen, welcome back to the program. Retail experiencing a bit of a rebound. Now, when you talk about retail in this case, is this brick and mortar stores only, or is this all retail, including online selling?
Oh, hey, Rob. Thanks for having me. I think you've seen a strong rebound in both channels, particularly as you're starting to see that the mainstream brick and mortar guys are really figuring out, the online the way to go online. So you had some great numbers this this month, top line at around 0.8%, core a little lower, of course, at about 3.3%. Interestingly, I think actually a very strong number. If you look at the core year on year, up about 4.7%. So I would say this is an outstanding number and a very good sign heading into the holidays.
The economy is chugging along. The many predictions say this could be the best holiday season ever in terms of retail sales. So for some of those stores that are just barely hanging on, if they have a bad holiday season, I mean, that's like a sign to the universe that they're on the 18th green, as it were.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like everything in life, Rob, there's always winners and losers, right? And, Walmart just had a great quarter, up 3.4% same-store sales, Home Depot, Macy's even. So, some of the names that you might not expect to see doing really well, like a Macy's, is, you know, they're turning the battleship, but it takes time.
Is Hurricane Florence responsible for some of this trend?
Great question, Chris. That's a hard number to say, but yes, because if you look at auto and building materials, they're particularly pronounced in terms of their lift. On the other hand, you had good department store sales and electronics store sales. So certainly a part of that, I would agree, is attributable to Hurricane Florence.
Okay, very nice to have you on the program today. Thanks for joining us. Stephen Keith Platt, director of the Platt Retail Institute in Hinsdale and research director at the Retail Analytics Council at Northwestern University.
WBBM News Time, 12:55. WBBM Business is sponsored by Baird. And from Bloomberg, here's Joan Doniger.
We have a sudden turn higher on Wall Street. The Dow is now up 149 points, the NASDAQ 97, the S&P 21, the Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is up 0.75%, led by Tribune Publishing shares. Now, the move higher comes after British Prime Minister Theresa May said she would forge ahead with a plan to leave the European Union as of next March. She says there will be no second referendum on the matter. Investors had been worried about the uncertainty. Sears is getting its money. It has a commitment for a $350 million loan to keep its doors open during the holidays. A specialty finance company has come up with the cash, but it won't be cheap. High interest rates paid monthly and a 3% loan closing fee are part of the deal. Sears is hoping to buy time to come up with a long-term survival plan. Walmart may need to send the people who close Toys R Us a thank you note. Company executives said Walmart is selling 30% more toys in stores this year now that Toys R Us is closed, and about 40% more toys online this fall versus last year. Investors were somewhat rattled yesterday when a key Democrat in the new Congress said the new NAFTA deal needs work to pass the new democratically controlled House next year. Automakers and parts suppliers are telling the Trump administration, though, that they are doubtful about the plan, too, because of tariffs on Mexican and Canadian aluminum and steel. With Business at 25 and 55, live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Joan Doniger, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS-FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.